Both Judge Englehart and I have been judges for a while. We are often at this time. We'll say to litigants, if you haven't been in our courtroom before, here are some rules. But I haven't been in this courtroom in a year, and I'm not exactly sure what the rules are. Is there somebody on the screen to my right? I hope Judge Higginbotham is with us. But we have three cases today. We'll see how well it goes with this dual appearance in person and remotely by our colleague. We will have the restrictions that whatever our courtroom deputy and others have told you about how to proceed, and I'm not necessarily familiar with all of what those may be. But nonetheless, the main thing I will say here is that, as I'm sure all of you are fully aware, this is a appellate argument. It is to hear the law and the facts in a dispassionate way to help us understand through our questions and through your presentations what is most helpful for us in deciding these cases. Our first case of the day is 210588, United States versus Clarence Bass. We'll hear from the defense counsel first. Have you orally argued in person in a year?
I've actually had a trial back in June in the Eastern District here. Not orally argued. No, sir. So, may it please the court, my name is Joey Mongaris and I represent Mr. Clarence Bass. Mr. Bass's Fourth Amendment rights were violated at every stop here by the arresting officers. I believe it'd be helpful to do a timeline, just a brief timeline. I understand the court has seen the record. However, here we have an off-duty police officer, Officer Langless, is at a stoplight, and all he sees is a black gentleman standing next to an open trunk. That's what he sees.
And he particularly described the automobile?
At that time, I believe he does. Later on, Mr. Langless at that point doesn't call dispatch, he calls a friend of his and says, hey, there's somebody selling CDs. And then from there, Officer Boudet gets instruction from his supervising officer that somebody is selling CDs, and then Officer Boudet arrives at the scene. He sees Mr. Bass with...
Before we move on the timeline, and I appreciate you handling it in that way.
Yes, sir.
Because I think it's important, the continuum of events.
Yes, sir.
That wasn't the only information they had, though, was it? I mean, he had been seen there before doing was reported, that he was selling bootlegged CDs and DVDs at that location in that vehicle. And they were aware of that as well, weren't they, before they encountered him this time?
So some of that is correct, some of that is incorrect, and that's kind of why I believe the timeline is helpful, and I'll start on that.
Okay.
Officer Langless, there's no other word for it, he lied. When he said he saw Mr. Bass selling CDs or something, that's a conclusionary statement on what he believed. In the motion to suppress, he testifies he did not see Mr. Bass conduct any sort of transaction. So when he calls that office, he calls his friend in the police department, he lies. He says, I saw Mr. Bass is selling CDs. That's a lie. And so then Officer Boudet goes out there. He does later testify, and on the CD and on his body cam, he says, I haven't seen you specifically, but I heard about you, this car. Not at that location, however. It was established during the hearing that at that specific location, Mr. Bass was not seen. He says somewhere else. So here what we have is we have a lie based upon Officer Langless's lie. Officer Boudet is now there, and that's why we argue that the initial reasonable suspicion...
District Judge, if the testimony was correct in front of the district judge, then she had the opportunity to factor not only that as a factual statement, but also to consider the credibility or not of the initial officer. Wasn't that all baked into the cake of the ruling that we're here for?
It was, Your Honor, and we can say I can't read Judge Lynn's mind at the time, and I read her ruling. I don't believe necessarily was part of her main concern, and that was just due to the question. I was the trial counsel at the time, and that was just the questioning. Did Officer Burdette take away the tip? Did Officer Burdette? And so I believe this court under Hensley can take away that tip from Officer Langless, because this wasn't a flyer based upon any sort of reasonable articulable facts or suspicion that Officer Langless saw. This was purely he sees somebody, and granted, in a high crime rate area, but this is not at night. This is 5:45, it's daylight. This is not at night, and as this court has said in Hill, being in a high crime rate area is not enough.
Also, you used the phrase, and it's in the briefing, and maybe the district court even mentioned that this is a high crime area. High crime beyond selling of CDs and DVDs, I take it?
No, sir. So the government is a little misleading in their brief, where it says this area was known for selling CDs. This area was not known for selling CDs. This area is high crime, and Officer Langless and Burdette both testify that the reason this is a high crime rate area, and as this court probably knows, but they've heard many attorneys in many cases, is that high crime is for drugs, guns, and violence, and that's what Officer Langless testifies. So it's a bit misleading. He does say he's known and seen through his experience.
About that. It's mentioned in the briefs. It does seem to me that those sorts of crimes, which to me is what a high crime area means, does it have any relevance? We'll hear from the other side too in deciding. I mean, isn't that sort of beside the point? What happened as to your client?
Maybe I misunderstand. I don't believe. I don't think there was any relevance of a high crime rate area in this particular instance. If what you're asking, I don't believe that that's. Maybe his training experience, but Officer Langless testified at the motion to suppress. There's nothing per se wrong with standing next to a trunk. So now the initial reason for Officer Burdette being there, for that reasonable suspicion, is based upon a lie by Officer Langless, and at best a conclusionary statement that Bass is selling CDs. When Officer Burdette arrives, now in his body cam, he says he's selling CDs, he's making a transaction, but we later learn through cross-examination that's not the case. He does not see any CDs whatsoever when he first arrives, and he does not see Mr.
This private citizen, they're all private citizens, but the person to whom he may have sold, named Floyd, is that the name of
Mr.
the...
Mr. Floyd, yes, sir.
...person. There was some sort of interchange, I believe, between them, was there not? And Floyd says he gave me the CD or DVD, whatever one it was. So whoever saw your client at the trunk and this other person, there actually was an exchange. Is that supported by the record?
It is accurate that there was an exchange. It's not accurate that Officer Burdette saw an exchange. He admits he did not see an exchange. So,
but that was the person he thought he was seeing an exchange with. We don't have two different people, correct?
No, sir. So Mr. Bass and what Officer Burdette, in essence, testifies to is that they were exchanging pleasantries. So now we have a gentleman and an...
Wait a minute. I thought Floyd said that he was given a CD.
Yes, sir. That's later on. I'm trying not to skip ahead to Mr. Floyd. But yes, sir, there was a transaction. But I'm trying to... objectively where the officer is when he first arrives is he does not see a transaction. Officer Burdette admits... He only sees Mr. Bass and Mr. Floyd exchanging pleasantries. So at that time, he has to have some objective, reasonable suspicion that crime is afoot or some articulable facts in order to detain him. He doesn't have that. So now what we have is just a black gentleman standing next to an open trunk, and then that, in essence, gets Officer Burdette there, where he only now sees pleasantries exchanged between Mr. Floyd and Mr. Bass. Now, yes, later on, and so at this point, Officer Burdette asks Mr. Bass, and admittedly so, says, are you selling CDs? And that's within the minute.
Does Mr. Bass close the trunk? He closes the trunk when the officer arrives, doesn't he?
So the court has access to the video. It's unclear whether or not Mr. Bass sees. I don't know whether, yes, he does close the trunk. I don't know if that's necessarily Mr. Floyd's walking away, Mr. Bass walking away, presumably to leave, I imagine. I don't necessarily.
But counsel, he popped the trunk voluntarily, as I understand it.
At some point,
he closed the trunk. We can say that at that point, they would have to have some probable cause or something to do so. But then he reached over and popped the trunk, and then they could see in. Difficulty I have with this line of argument is that once you into the trunk, saw the trunk, what he saw, these large numbers of CDs, rails, et cetera, et cetera. Well, if unless you can and attack that what appears to be a consensual search or observation anyway, he plainly would have problems once he saw all those CDs in there.
Yes, sir, and I think we're jumping ahead from what Judge Englehart, I think, was asking originally. So Mr. Bass closes the trunk when Officer Boudette arrives, and then Officer Boudette asks questions. Within 5 minutes of questioning, which we believe was unreasonable questioning to try to expand the scope of the search or of the stop, and just trying to ask, Officer Boudette consistently asks, he doesn't conduct any sort of investigation. All he asks is, can I have consent to search the car? Can I have some consent to search the car? And so under Sharp, and why we believe the detention was exceeded the scope, he never tried to examine.
You're moving to a different argument.
Well, and Judge, I'll answer your question.
Listen to me, please. The difficulty I'm having is that when that he voluntarily popped the trunk, and you can say that apart from any of this thing, that the entire detention was fouled because they detained him too long for a Terry stop. And so my concern is that where are you if in fact the popping of the trunk was consensual? And I thought it was conceded that it was.
And I apologize, Judge, if I didn't catch all of that, but I will get to, we don't believe.
Get to it now, please.
We don't believe Mr. Bass voluntarily opened the trunk. We believe that Officer Boudette, if you look at the factors laid out by the court, the six factors, we don't believe that Bass voluntarily opened the trunk. We believe that Officer Boudette used coercive measures. If you look at the extent of his awareness of his right to refuse, he asked Officer Boudette, what happens if I don't consent to the search? His education and intelligence level, as the PSR states, Mr. Bass does not have a high education level, and the belief that there's incriminating evidence being found, which clearly Bass knew would be found. So what we have now is that Mr. Bass does pop open the trunk, Your Honor, and at that point, Officer Boudette only sees binders in the trunk, not CD. He sees one spindle of CDs. And on that spindle, it's just if the court has those, you can only see the top of the CD. And so at that point, he sees Sharpie written on one CD. Now, granted, I'm sure if you look underneath those CDs, but now he's the officer's trying to focus now on probable cause once that trunk is open. And so he sees, granted, binders, but he doesn't see CDs and binders or know what's on those CDs. And he sees Sharpie written on one CD on top of the spindle. And so based upon Mr. Bass's statements that he's selling CDs and that, you know, he's been in trouble before, Officer Boudette tries to gain some sort of suspicion. But then, Your Honor, he talks to Mr. Floyd, and Mr. Floyd says, he actually didn't sell me the CDs, he just gave me the CDs. So at this point, Your Honor, we're at the 8-minute, around the 8-minute mark of Mr. Bass being there, And nothing is illegal per se. Selling CDs is not illegal per se.
You're covering ground you've covered before, and if Judge Higginbotham's satisfied, we're at the 2-minute mark of your argument.
Yes, sir.
And why don't you discuss the Armed Career Criminal Act claim that you have?
No, sir.
The Armed Career Criminal Enhancement.
Yes, sir. Well, Your Honor, I understand the ruling in, I believe it's Scholar. We don't necessarily believe we're absolutely foreclosed on that. I understand it's not good with the reliance on Vickers and Scholar and Prentice. However, I believe it's a bit different than what...
It's your interpretation of the Arkansas statute that I'm interested you would flesh out.
Well, that's where...
Is this not coterminous with the conduct that we need to be looking for under the Section 922?
Correct. Well, so the Arkansas, and maybe, I don't want to get it confused, but the Arkansas statute criminalizes here what we believe is conduct greater than what Congress or even Scholar says. We believe it narrowed the involving like specific conduct. Here, in this Arkansas statute, the former definition of delivery is a defendant could be convicted if the defendant did not possess a controlled substance or the delivery never occurred. So that is conduct that Mr. Bass, if that, or that this statute has, that he could have been convicted of this in Arkansas, and we believe that that goes beyond what the Shuler ruling said.
What would you say in the argument about Shepherd documents, even if you're right there, which the government doesn't concede, we do have the judgment from those convictions that indicated he actually did have possession with intent to distribute, or whatever the phrase is in Arkansas. Wouldn't that take care of it?
And I'm out of time, Your Honor, if I may answer. Yes.
Not out of time if you're answering a question.
Yes, sir. I understand where the court is going towards, that you can shepherdize and actually see what Mr. Bass was actually convicted of. However, I just don't believe that I still believe that a court must imagine what kind of conduct an ordinary crime would prohibit. And here, I don't see that statute is over, the Arkansas statute is overbroad and does not take into account what ACCA.
Well, I don't want you to respond to this, but I'm getting the impression you don't see that as the strongest part of your case.
No, Your Honor.
All right. We'll hear from the government.
Thank you, Judge.
May it please the court, Ryan Niedermeyer on behalf of the United States.
Let me ask something. It goes to both counsel. Were you hearing Judge Higginbotham all right? Was it distorted or anything like that when he was asking the question?
From counsel table, it was a little distorted. I'm not sure how it heard up here,
Judge. Yes, from here as well, but I guess that is the best we can do. We'll see if we can improve it.
Yes, Your Honor. This court should affirm the district court's denial of Mr. Bass's motion to suppress. After conducting a 2.5-hour evidentiary hearing, Chief Judge Lynn found that police were responding to a tip from an off-duty police officer that...
What do you make of your friend on the other side saying that initial report was an imaginative one? That's not the word he used, but an incorrect explanation of what was seen.
My opposing counsel says that Officer Langlois lied at the suppression hearing, and I would respectfully disagree. If you look at the record, specifically 276 through 277, Officer Langlois testified to the district court that he called Sergeant Martin to report Bass selling something out of his trunk. He didn't claim that he specifically said it was CDs. He just saw a man standing next to a purple Challenger with a red stripe appearing to sell something out of the trunk of his vehicle. And Officer Bidette, when
once he gets on the stand and he's cross-examined or wherever this comes out, what was being said in the earlier argument, I guess the officer acknowledged that he didn't actually see the sale. This was an extrapolation from what he saw. I mean,
yes.
That's a lie.
No, Your Honor, that's exactly correct. He said that, you know, he saw Bass gesturing from his vehicle, and in his experience as a law enforcement officer, that appeared to him to be someone selling something out of the vehicle. And that's the district court also found that in its motion. And, you know, I would point out that Mr. Bass, in his brief, did not claim that the district court committed clear error when it found the facts supporting its order on the suppression motion.
Well, let me move on to what was seen in the trunk once the officer walks up. Is there evidence on which, I don't know if Judge Lynn says this in her order, did the officer actually see CDs marked with a Sharpie or whatever before the trunk was closed as the officer was walking up to Bass?
As the officer initially saw Bass, he testified that he saw Bass holding a binder and having a hand-to-hand transaction with Mr. Floyd. And in the officer's experience, he had experience with unlawful CD sales. And he said, you know, that's the kind of behavior that I would see. And then Bass took that binder, put it in the trunk of his car, and closed the trunk when he saw Officer Bidette. And importantly, when Officer Bidette walked up...
It seems to me part of your argument is once the trunk is opened back up again, they see these bootleg CDs and DVDs, you've got to have some knowledge, some probable cause to believe that's what they are. Do you think that probable cause had arisen already when the officer was walking up, sees them in Bass's hands? I don't think that's been your argument, has it? And puts them in the trunk. Don't you need, insofar as the argument you made so far, aren't you relying on what was seen after the trunk was opened a second time, or opened again?
Yes, sir.
I mean, it seems a
bit of
a stretch, at least it's harder to say that he had seen enough as he was walking up and saw these in his hand to identify what they were.
I agree, Your Honor. If it was only Officer Bidette's observation, I would agree that that wouldn't be probable cause enough. However, he immediately asked Mr. Bass, hey, what's up? Did you just sell him CDs? And Mr. Bass said, yes, I have. And then Mr. Bass admits that he had been previously charged with unlawful labeling CDs. And when Officer Bidette asked, is there anything else illegal in the car that I need to know about? Bass says, just the CDs. At that point, Officer Bidette had probable cause that Mr. Bass was illegally selling CDs. Mr. Bass admitted that he was. He admitted that more CDs would be found in the car and that those were the illegal things that would be found in the car. And at that point, Officer Bidette had probable cause to believe that Bass was selling pirated CDs. And even if there was no probable cause at that point, there certainly was once he saw the mass amount of CDs in the trunk.
So let me ask you, maybe this is a follow-up to what Judge Southwick just asked, but my focus is on the time period from the time Officer Bidette, or Boudet as we'd say in South Louisiana, shows up, trunk is closed, and it seems like there's an inordinate amount of time where he's questioning, and I know you've watched the videotape a lot more than I have, where he's questioning, I guess someone could even say, if you were to be an advocate, that he's badgering. And Mr. Bass says, well, I need to call my wife because it's her car. And no, you don't need to call your wife. So there's this whole dialogue that extends, I think counsel said something like 8 minutes at some point before he finally relents. Mr. Bass finally relents. How would you classify that time in terms of being a Terry stop, or you mentioned probable cause at the outset of that time period? How would, walk us through that to the point where he opens the trunk, and how is that legally sufficient for Officer Bidette to continue the encounter?
Yes, Your Honor. At that point, I still would classify the stop as a Terry stop. And Officer Bidette was diligently trying to investigate the unlawful CD sales. Especially since Bass admitted that more CDs were in the car, it was perfectly reasonable for Officer Bidette to try to gain entry to the car through consent. And as far as the consent itself goes, the repeated questioning to gain access to the vehicle, I'm not aware of any cases that would say that that was coercive, and the district court certainly didn't find that it was coercive.
Is he detained, for instance, for Miranda purposes at that time?
No, Your Honor. He was not detained for Miranda purposes until after...
After the trunk is open and he's placed under arrest.
Yes.
I understood that to be your position. But he's told he can't call his wife. He doesn't try to get in the car and drive off, but it seems pretty clear that that would be not the right thing to do under the circumstances. I have problems classifying that as he's not being detained.
Yes, Your Honor.
What's your best case that would inform the court that that's not, that is a valid Terry stop and that he's not detained?
Your Honor, I would point this court to United States v. Salinas, which I don't believe I used in my brief, Your Honor. I came across that case in preparation for this argument. I wasn't sure how central it would be. But in that case, this court talked about restricting the defendant's cell phone use is not by itself sufficient to conclude the defendant was in custody. Officer Bidette made very clear when he was talking to Bass, I don't want you calling anyone because I don't know who you're calling. It certainly is an aspect of officer safety there. So restricting his cell phone use in and of itself is, this court has said that that is not itself sufficient to conclude that he was in custody.
Why don't you respond to the same question, but in terms of categories. When did the Terry stop end? When did probable cause begin?
When probable cause began, or when the Terry stop moved into an arrest?
Well, when is the justification in your argument for this encounter continue, and when does it end under Terry? And when does the officer have the right, whether he exercises it yet, to arrest him?
The officer certainly had. There is no doubt that Officer Bidette had probable cause when he saw the CDs in the trunk. And it was very clear that...
Meaning when it was opened a second time. Opened as he's walking up, closed, when it's reopened.
Yes, Your Honor. When Bass pops it.
Are you saying it was Terry all the way until, getting back to Judge Englehart's, these 7 or 8 minutes of careful investigatory work or badgering, depending on your point of view, all of that's Terry in your best sort of characterization?
Yes, Your Honor. And the trunk was open at the 5-minute mark. Officer Bidette then goes and talks to Floyd for a little while, and then comes back and asks again to search the rest of the vehicle. Bass doesn't let him, and he says, "Well, I believe that I have the ability to." And I would say at that point, Bass is now in custody. He's put on the curb. He's put in handcuffs. He has another officer standing over him. It's pretty clear at that point that he's in custody under the Fourth Amendment, and I would say that that's where the Terry stop had ended and had moved into an arrest.
Well, there's case law, these phrases get tossed around, there's no stopwatch on a Terry stop, but it does seem to me that there is a problem, not necessarily in this case, but there's a problem just analytically, that a Terry stop can be continued basically indefinitely, and it seems to me there's at least a prospect that as he's trying to dispel his suspicions, this particular officer is getting close to some sort of overly extended effort to remove or confirm his suspicions. I mean, when do those efforts to continue questioning to try to get a better answer, when does that time period end? In this situation, when would it have gone on too long? Give me some sort of sense of when it would actually be a problem, because obviously you think it wasn't a problem in this case.
Your Honor, I would say if Bass hadn't initially admitted to selling CDs, that he didn't admit that he had previously sold CDs, and that Officer Bidette was still trying to get into the car, that would be, just badgering and not diligently investigating.
You're saying that Terry was what justified the stop until the trunk was opened a second time. If Bass just never agreed to open the trunk, doesn't Bass have to just step away at some point and say, thank you, Mr. Citizen, nothing further I can do here?
The officer Bidette still had probable cause to search the vehicle under the automobile exception. Now, the district court didn't necessarily look at that exception in its order. However, as this court knows, it can affirm on any basis. And Officer Bidette, again, at that point, he has a previous complaint about Mr. Bass selling CDs out of the trunk of his purple Challenger with a red stripe. He has a tip that Mr. Bass is selling something, again, and he gets an admission that he's selling CDs and an admission that he has more CDs in the car. At that point, Officer Bidette has probable cause to believe that the evidence of unlawful labeling in Texas or selling pirated materials would be found in the car. And so whether or not Bass had consented, Officer Bidette still had probable cause to search that vehicle under the automobile exception. And so if Officer Bidette had then searched the vehicle under the automobile exception, he would have not only found CDs, he would have found the backpack full of drugs that Bass was charged for at the state level, and Bass would have still been searched incident to arrest, and the pistol for which he was federally charged and convicted would have been found in his pocket. So the automobile exception applies here just as well as the district court's original finding that the search incident to arrest also applies. And as far as the consent question goes, the continued questioning of Mr. Bass to get in the vehicle is, even if that were to be found coercive, that is just one of many factors that the district court analyzed in this case. The court specifically found that police were not coercive, and specifically that Officer Bidette was reasonable in discussing, in talking to Mr. Bass, that he didn't raise his voice, he didn't curse, he didn't have his hand on his gun. Now, Mr. Bass's custodial status does weigh in favor of finding that he did not consent, and so does his knowledge that incriminating evidence would be found in his car. However, the other factors still weigh in favor of finding voluntary consent. Bass was cooperative. He volunteered information about his previous charges, and he admitted to having more CDs in his car, and he offered to pop the trunk for the officer. And he also was aware of his right to refuse consent. And my opposing counsel mentions Mr. Bass's limited education. However, this court has specifically said that that's not a dispositive factor, and that's in U.S. v. Soriano. In that case, Mr. Soriano, I believe, had a sixth grade education. And this court said that that's still not enough to necessarily say that he wasn't aware of his ability to consent, that he didn't know what was going on. And so that's certainly not dispositive in this case. And so whether it's under the automobile exception or a search incident to arrest after consent was given to search the vehicle, Officer Bidette did not violate his Fourth Amendment, Mr. Bass's Fourth Amendment rights in his dealing with him. And as far as the ACCA argument goes in this case, Your Honor, I believe the court's intuition is correct that not only is this Arkansas statute absolutely a predicate for ACCA, also, if you look at the Shepard documents, this court has said that that statute is divisible. We can look at the Shepard documents. In this case, Mr. Bass was charged with actual possession in Arkansas.
What is the Shepard document here? The PSR refers to the information. We didn't find the actual information. I mean, the indictment slash information. There is a fairly form boilerplate judgment with blanks filled in. Have you looked at that? What would you assert is the Shepard relevant material here?
Yes, Your Honor. The PSR did rely on the information, and I believe the government had submitted at the district court level had submitted documents with the information. I apologize, I can't recall exactly the ROA number, but I believe they were attached to the court sentence.
We found them. I just wasn't sure it was before the district court and whether it was attached to the PSR or just what, but we did not find the capital letter I information charge document, but maybe it's there. Keep going.
Yes, Your Honor. And so I think this court's intuition is correct, and specifically opposing counsel's argument that the delivery definition is too broad. This court has looked at a similar delivery definition under Texas statute in United States v. Prentice and found that it was not too broad at all, and this was post-Shular. So I believe that this certainly serves as an ACCA predicate, and if the court has no more questions, I would like to yield my time back to the court.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you, court. Your Honors, just in quick response to a few things that counsel government just explained, if the court looks at the record 122, there was an examining trial where Officer Boudette was testified. And he testified that his that day I was having a meeting with my supervisor along with my partner, Officer Williams. My supervisor received a phone call from an off-duty officer that was going home. That off-duty officer informed my supervisor that Defendant Bass was selling DVDs at the corner of the intersection of Cockrell Hill and Camp Wisdom. That is why we believe Officer Langley's tip was a lie, because that was what was relayed to Officer Boudette's supervisor. Secondly, with regards to what Officer Boudette actually saw when he arrived, on the record on 309, and during cross-examination, he testifies he only saw pleasantries between Mr. Bass and Mr. Floyd. So he does not see Mr. Bass conduct any sort of transaction. He admits that, in fact, I did not see a transaction. I just saw pleasantries. So they're basing this his conclusion that something is illegal based upon a lie. Now, I understand that they have some training and experience, but Officer Boudette, and I understand we're not supposed to look at the subjective intent of Officer Boudette, I understand that, but he immediately says, you're doing something illegal. I mean, within the first 5 minutes, he tells Mr. Bass there's something illegal. Selling CDs is not per se illegal. At most, here, if you're selling your own CD without permission of the store owner, that's a city code violation. That's a non-arrestable offense. It's a ticketable offense. That's it, at most. Now, what Officer Boudette later finds out, and under Taylor, Officer Boudette must not disregard facts that tend to dissipate probable cause. What Officer Boudette later finds out is that, in fact, Mr. Bass did not sell Mr. Floyd's CDs. So there's nothing illegal that occurred at this point, and granted, this is after the trunk is open. So here's what the government wants this court under the automobile exception. The officer has to have probable cause to believe the vehicle contains contraband.
Did he say at the outset of the encounter, did Mr. Bass say, I'm selling CDs?
Yes, he did. We can't take back that fact. But that is not per se illegal. If he's selling CDs, if it's his own CD, that's not illegal. And Officer Boudette never tried to ask him that. The court made a great point earlier. All he tried to do is try to search his car. Can I have consent? Can I have consent? And at one point, I believe, and I don't exactly know, I would say at the 10-minute mark, he says, for the fifth time, and that probably was more than five times, can I search your car? Now, it's a little confusing because Officer Boudette tells Mr. Bass, you're not arrested, you're just detained. But at the suppression hearing, he says, oh no, I had enough probable cause to arrest him at the 5-minute mark when I saw a spindle of CDs with Sharpie written on them. So what we don't have here, this high crime rate area that's known for selling CDs. What we have here is Mr. Bass saying, I'm selling CDs, that's not per se illegal. And then he actually was not selling CDs. So at that 5-minute mark of seeing a Sharpie and not asking or trying to investigate whether or not those CDs were illegal or it was actually contraband, it was unreasonable. That definitely exceeded the scope from what this court and the Supreme Court has ruled in Terry and other cases, it exceeded the scope of why he was there. And this court in Spears and in McKinney most recently, in quoting Spears, the court said the common occurrence of a backpack in a vehicle and the multitude of innocent uses for that backpack make the presence of the backpack little persuasive value. Here, the same thing as CDs. While the officer doesn't have to dispel all uses of innocent reasons, it's CDs. There's many innocent reasons. It could have been his own CD where he says Mr. Bass's music, and that's what he wrote on Sharpie. That's not illegal, and that doesn't give him probable cause under the automobile exception. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right, counsel. Thank you both.